Senate will come to order. Roll call by the Chief Clerk.
Roll call for Friday, January 16th. Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
DeCaria.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Excused.
Excused. Honeycutt.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Massey.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Excused.
Excused. Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Sessions.
Here.
Townsend.
Here.
Basie.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Hines.
Here.
28 present, 2 excused.
Prayer by Father Conkleton.
Let us pray. Heavenly Father, as we continue the work of introducing legislation and resolution, please study and revise these measures. And as bills come on for the second reading of the day, be with us.
Join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading, correction, and approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports at the journal of January the 15th, 2009, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the day today is Dr. Amy Therese Bell, MD from Cheyenne. And the nurse is Norma Randall from the Cheyenne Regional Medical Center. Although the thought for the day, don't be afraid of pressure. Remember that pressure is what turns a lump of coal into a diamond. At this point, I'm going to take privilege of the floor and ask Pam Anderson to come up, please. I have a certificate for Pam. The 60th Legislature of the State of Wyoming presents a certificate of appreciation to Pamela Anderson. Thank you. For your dedication to the Wyoming State Legislature, you have agreed to be the president-appointed spouse for the social events of the Senate spouse. Thank you also to Senator Anderson for loaning you to me. Dated this 15th day of January 2009, John J. Hines, President of the Senate. Thank you. Appreciate that. Senator Von Flatiron.
My apologies to the body, Mr. President, but I seem to have missed Senate File 58, vehicle title and registration has small appropriation, and I ask that it be referred to Appropriations Committee number 2.
Senate File 58 will be reappointed to Appropriation Committee number 2 without objections. So appointed. So referred. Okay, introduction, reading, and references of bills. Senate File 100, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 100, sponsored by Senator Hastert, Public School Nurse Appropriation, an act relating to public education.
Senate File 100 have been appointed, assigned to Committee number 4, Education. Senate File 104, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 104, sponsored by Senator Johnson, Life Insurance Limitation of Dependent Coverage, an act relating to group life insurance.
Senate File 104 have been referred to Committee number 7, Corporations. Senate File 102, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 102, sponsored by Senator Perkins, County Officials Salaries, and Act Relating to County Officials.
Senate File 102 have been referred to Committee number 7, Corporations. Senate File 99, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 99, sponsored by Senator Hastert, Career and Technical Training Grants, an act relating to labor and employment.
Senate File 99 have been referred to Committee number 9, Minerals. Senate File 109, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 109, sponsored by Senator Meyer, Producer Protection, an act relating to agriculture producers' liens.
Senate File 109 have been referred to Committee number 9, Minerals. Senate File 110, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 110, sponsored by Senator Bebout, Designated Real Estate Agents, an act relating to real estate licenses.
Senate File 110 have been referred to Committee number 9, Minerals. Senate File 108, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 108, sponsored by Senator Bebout, Long-Term Care Facilities, an act relating to the Wyoming Business Council.
Senate File 108 have been referred to Committee number 10, Labor. Senate File 106, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 106, sponsored by Senator Hastert, Medication Disposal Program, an act relating to public health and safety.
Senate File 106 have been referred to Committee 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
January the 15th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate File 2, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, and Johnson. No, Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. January the 15th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 6, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Coe, Dockstader, Jennings, and Session, Senator Burns, Chairman. January the 15th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 7. Reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Sessions, Senator Burns, Chairman. January the 15th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 29, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. January the 15th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 4, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Coe, Dockstader, Jennings, and Sessions, Senator Burns, Chairman. January the 15th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 5, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Sessions, Senator Burns, Chairman. January the 15th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 33, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Bill's on second reading. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, Senate File 5, State Parks and Cultural Resources, South Pass City, which was just read in, contains an appropriation, and I would ask that you re-refer it to appropriations.
Senate File 5 will be referred to appropriations. Committee number 2, if there's no objections.
That's the one where they wanted
to. Right. This year, on our second and third reading amendments, we have a little change. We'll be going to colored sheets on your amendment. Your second reading amendments will be green, and your third reading will be orange. This should be a little easier to find your amendments if you're not colorblind. Otherwise, that's another problem. Okay, Senate File 3, second reading of the Senate File.
Abandoned mine reclamation liens.
Second Senate File 3, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 25, second reading of the Senate File.
District Courts Release of Information.
Well, you're just so much smarter than me.
Senate File 25, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 44, second reading of the Senate File.
Pipeline Inspection and Safety.
Senate File 44, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 49, second reading of the Senate File.
Psychologist Licensure.
There are amendments. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I was just going to ask you to turn my mic off.
I just did.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, amendments for Senate File 49. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, or excuse me, Mr. President, would at this time withdraw the first reading amendment number one to this bill?
Amendment number one, second.
Order. I think it has to be read.
You have to be read.
Oh, excuse me.
Okay, excuse me.
Eager Beaver.
The reading clerk will read in the second.
Senate File 49, second reading amendment number one, page two, line four.
Now, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Again, well, I've changed my mind. Now, no, actually. I could withdraw amendment number one, Mr. President.
Without objection, amendment number one will be withdrawn. Senate File 49, Standing Committee Amendment number two. Reading clerk will read the amendment.
Senate File 49, second reading amendment number 2, page 2, line 5.
Okay, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. As we looked on the, with respect, this is, comes on page 12. All we do is leave the current language in there, but what I think that there was some confusion in the old amendment and indeed what would constitute a conviction. Normally, while there are certain exceptions, a conviction would include any plea, whether it was guilty plea or a nolo plea or also a verdict of guilty. This proposal would add a new section at the end which would define conviction. This is something you find in a number of other statutes, and ultimately would define a conviction for purposes of this act means that it would include a plea of guilty, of nolo contender, or a verdict of guilty on a judgment of conviction which may be rendered. The reason I think this is an important or a workable amendment is that it clearly identifies then what conviction is, and if on third reading or in the future they wanted to exclude nolo pleas from being considered a conviction, it would be easy to come back and amend this particular section so you can define exactly what a conviction is. Or the other side is you could tighten it up. There are two other dispositions of criminal cases which are not included in this, which are oftentimes called 301s, which is kind of an opportunity, or called deferred prosecutions, where for a first offense that you plead guilty, but it's withheld, and if you keep your nose clean for a period of time, then the record is expunged. But those are not included in this. But anyway, I just thought this would be a helpful amendment.
Senator your favorable Perkins, consideration. Would you care to move that amendment, please?
Thank you. Yes, I would move the amendment at this time. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I support the amendment and appreciate the sponsor bringing it. I think it not only clarifies the discussion we had yesterday, but it also clarifies the definition of conviction that's in other subsections in that particular part of the statutes.
Further discussion on the amendment? Are you ready for the question? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate File 49, second reading amendment number 3. The reading clerk will please read it.
Senate File 49, second reading amendment number 3, page 1, line 14.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 49. Ladies and gentlemen, what this does is address the definition of what constitutes practice of psychology. It makes the language in that act conform more like the descriptions that we provide in other professional licensing statutes. So it's a clarification, sort of a cleaning up. It also makes sure that the issue that we described yesterday, and that is now the items looked on the amendment listed as A, B, and C. All you need to do is conduct any one or a combination of those to be engaging in the practice of psychology. It does delete the language with respect to what is the burden of proof that's required of a party or of the board to revoke a license. As with other licensing statutes, we really rely on the status of the case law, which is clear and convincing evidence, so we don't have to specify that. And if you look through other practice acts, you'll find that it's not specified in those acts. We just relied on case law. We did take out the provision dealing with granting a license, believing that that is more properly addressed in a separate section. In that sense, I think it is more of a cleanup, and I urge your support of the amendment. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment. Not all in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Discussion on the bill. Question is, Senate file 49, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Considerations of bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business, considerations of bills in general file.
Resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senator Martin.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration is Senate File 9. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 9, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, State Engineer Permit Application and Act Relating to the State Engineer. It was assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands and Water Resources, that reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Geis.
When the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate File 9 do pass, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Johnson to continue handling the bill.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have an amendment, and at this time I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 9 that we hope answers questions or hesitations or whatever from yesterday. Basically what this does is...
Order.
Pardon?
We need to have the reading clerk read the amendment. Oh.
Senate File 9, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 14.
Senator Johnson.
Now, Mr. Chairman?
Now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What did I say? Basically, we hope this will answer any of the questions we have. At this time, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to divide the amendment, and I think that it can divide lines 1 through 15 and 16 through 18, or as far as 18 goes before the period.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to further divide it so that the first division would be lines 1 through 9. The second division would be lines 10 through 15, and the final division would be lines 16 through 19. So subsection C would be one division, and subsection C would be division two, subsection D would be division three.
Yeah. Point of order. I think Mr. Chairman, does not
8 and 9 have to go through 10 and 15?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
No, 8 and 9 are properly part of the first division. And, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I got you.
Senator Scott.
If I may explain, if you adopt the amendment, the first division, through lines 8 and 9, what you've done is adopted the portion of the bill that allows the state engineer to get the applications electronically and with the modification on page 2, line 21, line 6 in the amendment, allows rules for just the electronic division. And you delete the rest of it, and then you put in, if you adopt division 2 of the amendment, you put in a provision, you take out with the first division, you take out the balance of the paragraph as it's there now, and then with the second division, you would put back in authority for rules and regulations going forward for this whole section, not just the electronic, but the whole section. And then with the third division, you would grandfather in the rules already promulgated for that section through July 1, 2008. So the first division does properly include the item on line 8 of the amendment, which is page 22, lines 22 through 24, delete, because if you want to adopt just the first provision and just allow the electronic transfer or the electronic application and the rules related to that, you need to adopt that provision. And then comes the question, do we want to go the further steps? So I think that's a proper division of the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, to move the process along on and for division number one, and I call for the question.
Well,
question having been called for.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. What I would like to ask with respect to, I understand what you're trying to do when you change the word section to subsection. I think we ought to support the amendment. Having said that, when we come back to look at what we've done, if the issue is we're trying to grant rulemaking for electronic filing, we ought to say so. If you begin to go look up at everything that's in this subsection, I submit to you this subsection addresses a lot of things well beyond electronic filing.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me respectfully disagree with that and see if I can explain why. What we're doing with this first division of the amendment is we're dividing what's already here. The old language is subsection A. The new language, look at the reference, page 2, line 16, we're inserting a B at the start of the new language. So what we're talking about for rulemaking here is subsection B. That's the subsection. The state engineer may allow the application to be submitted electronically as provided by the Uniform Electronic Transaction Act, WS thus and such. And the state engineer may adopt rules and regulations according to the Administrative Procedure Act as necessary to implement this subsection with the line 8 change on the amendment line 8. The reference is page 2, line 21, after this insert subsection. So the subsection is strictly this new language, which is relating to the submitting the applications electronically. So I think that's all the rules and regulations, as this is written, I think that's all these rules and regulations would apply to. And frankly, I think the first division of this amendment is non-controversial. I think, and maybe somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, that we all feel that it makes sense to allow the state engineer to take these applications electronically. It's part of our general move to do things electronically. The controversial items, I think, come next, and I think we have confined this first division just to the points that relate to that.
Senator Von Flattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once you do rule whether or not this is divisible as requested, could you read it back to us or have the sponsor read it back to us so we understand exactly how we divided it?
The chair does find that the amendment's divisible as Senator Scott had proposed. And the first division is 1 through 9. The second, 10 through 15, and the third, 16 through 19. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I do have a question about the first division because I don't know that it's clear, at least to me, and certainly I'm slower than most, but it's clear to me that it is clear to me exactly what the purpose of particularly line 6 where we when we restrict to the subsection. And my question is this. Ultimately, what this is ultimately if you're going to either construct, enlarge, or extend a ditch, canal, or other distributing work or performing work in on water delivery systems, you've got to ask the state engineer for a permit. And then this section, as it's currently written, defines what has to be in that application, and so anytime that you're going to give any permit or request any permit, then you have a list of items in there. And while that might at first blush seem fairly straightforward, it seems to me that with the division as it is, and as we've got division one line and we restrict it to a subsection only dealing with electronic filing. It seems to me that you're going to create a significant diversity between manual filings and electronic filings. So in electronic filing, if, for example, we look at the location and description of the proposed ditch, canal, or other work, I mean, is that going to be on a manual drawing? I guess you could put that in on the back of a napkin or a rudimentary drawing and a manual drawing. But then the state engineer, if you do that electronically, would have the right to say, well, you need to have final construction drawings, renderings to submit it with your electronic filing. And so when you look at the way that this amendment, Division 1 of this amendment goes in and we restrict to a subsection, we're going to allow the state engineer to do that very specifically on electronic filing. But then it still, it seems to me, is a little bit, as long as you meet the rudimentary requirements of what's in the statute as it's written right now on a manual filing, we're going to create a situation where why wouldn't you file manually because the state engineer can't control that, but if you file electronically, the state engineer can really control it. And so if we could have some discussion on that or explain that to me, maybe I'm misunderstanding that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, basically I think the remarks we just heard are an argument for divisions 2 and 3 of the amendment. But as the first division stands,
the rulemaking is strictly limited to subsection B, which is allowing the application to be submitted electronically. And I would construe that as being limited to the mechanics of how you go about submitting something electronically as opposed to manually. If the last two divisions were to fail and you couldn't adopt rules further defining the subsection A, the old language, I don't think that the fact that you can adopt rules for just subsection B would give you the authority to go back and adopt regulations as to how the items in subsection A are to be substantively handled, as opposed to just how they're going to be handled electronically. That would be my construction of the statute. You can disagree, but that would be my construction of the statute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right now, under the regulations and instructions from the State Engineer's Office for Part 1, Surface Water, Section 11 reads, forms. The following forms for use in submitting applications involving surface water appropriations are available at the State Engineer's Office in Cheyenne. And then there's a list of the forms. So the manual forms are there, and they're listed here, and they're available. And I would imagine, I hope that the electronic forms are as close to the manual forms as they can get so that those filling them in can be comfortable.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And really, as a matter of practice, you've got to get an engineer that goes out and surveys it. He makes a plat, they do a linen, and they go through the whole thing so they know exactly where it is. Basically, the electronic forms are just, as the good senator from Natrona County said, they're just going to allow you to put that information in electronically, transfer it electronically, rather than having to do it, you know, at the old way that they did it back at the turn of the century.
Is there further discussion on division number one? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt division number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Division number one has been adopted. Now we're on division two.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I don't have too much in the way of strong feelings on this division. Let me just explain very clearly what I think it does. It gives the state engineer, on the effective date of the adoption of this subsection, it gives the state engineer the ability to adopt rules and regulations as necessary to implement this section, and this section is section 414501, everything that you see in the bill. And it's a prospective authority, would take effect on the effective date of the Act, July 1, 2009. So he'd have rulemaking authority for just this section going forward. And that's what this does, and it would, I think, answer the concern that was raised earlier. Does he have the authority to put in rules and regulations as to how you go about, whether you do it electronically or not, how do you go about applying for one of these things you want to do?
Is there further discussion on Division 2? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask that we would resist that, because I look at this and it actually puts into rule rule and regulation the ability to define a criminal penalty by a state agency. Though it is a misdemeanor, it basically makes that determination by someone not from the court system but from an administrative position. And I think that's probably a little problematic. And again, I think that if we're going to be looking at our water law, if there's anything that needs to be changed, I think we should have that discussion on the floor.
Senator Bebout.
From Goshen County, you know, that must be in statute if you're referring to the fact that if you give the state engineer the right to do the rules, it must be in statute. Could you please let me know what statutory language says that they are authorized by law to do that?
Senator Meyer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just saying that this is the rule and regulation. This is the statute we're looking at. I'm looking at lines 14, 15, and 16 on page 2, and it says, any person who shall willfully divert or use water to the detriment of others without compliance of with law shall be deemed guilty of a misdemeanor punishable by WS 413616. The rule and regulation would be able, the state engineer would be the person who would determine what would be considered a willful diversion or use of water and what would be considered to be to the detriment of others. And at that point in time, they would basically determine whether or not a person would be guilty of a misdemeanor by their rule and regulation. So let's say you've got a coal bed methane well that's basically sucking the water out from somebody that's got a stock well. Well, that's to the detriment of that person that has a stock well. That argument might be made. The state engineer could say, okay, that coal bed methane operator is guilty of a misdemeanor. That would be an example about how these rules and regulations could be used in that circumstance.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And all we're saying is that, and that happens in other parts of our statutes where different agencies, if this body and the policy of the state has decided that we should treat certain violations as misdemeanors, I mean, that happens all the time and you have rules to implement that. This isn't any different than that. It doesn't preclude or mean that that person is guilty of a misdemeanor. It means under the definition in our statutes, we think that he's gone beyond wherever is reasonable and we think that he should be treated as a misdemeanor. But he still has all the availability of law to defend his position. I mean, I don't think we're doing anything different here than we do in a lot of other statutes and other agencies in the state.
Senator Meyer.
Certainly the difference is that we write the law and we make that determination on what's a misdemeanor. In this, the state engineer makes that determination on what the misdemeanor is.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman. Couple things, and I rise in support of division number 2. First of all, the state engineer doesn't find him guilty. A court finds him guilty. They get to go to court, and there may be certain counties, I don't know, that don't use their courts in the state, but virtually 23 do, and maybe there's a couple more outliers that don't use the court system. I don't know. I'll go there next summer and find out. But really, it's got to go to court. This is just like lots of provisions in the law. The safeguards are there. But in terms of our oversight, the legislative oversight of what happens in water law, this portion of the amendment actually strengthens our ability to use that oversight. It says he can go ahead and write these rules. Now, if you're interested, there is a process. LSO hands out those quarterly updates, what rules are coming through, who's in charge of them. All you got to do is call down here, and they will send any legislator a copy of the rules, a copy of the hearing schedules. You can monitor it. You have to actively go get it. I caution you, don't sign up for all of them. or buy a bigger mailbox, because it's a lot of stuff. But if you want to single out the rules written under this piece of legislation, any legislator can do it, takes a simple phone call or email or whatever. Because we're saying it's rules going forward, we have the opportunity then to look at them. The next step is, if you say, gee, I don't like where this is going, got one of two things. You can go to the hearing. You have absolute standing to go there. Say, that's not what we passed. If you don't want to go to the hearing, then you can call management counsel and say, now, I recommend that you get proactive and ask for a copy of the rules and put a hold on them. So we as legislators have the opportunity to look at these. What this does is says we're going to be able to look at them, maybe some we haven't seen quite as well as we saw in the past or whatever. This actually gives us more of an ability to see what those rules look like and what they do as a result of the legislation before us today. I urge you to vote aye.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and not only do we have that ability, but with the APA procedures, the practitioners in this area, some of them be attorneys, most of them will be surveyors and engineers, have and will take advantage of that opportunity to see what the state engineer is doing to them now, because this is their bread and butter. And if there's a problem, we'll hear about it. So there are real protections built into the rulemaking process, and I, too, would urge you to vote aye.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, and I guess I'd like to ask questions of the folks that have been studying this issue, because I'm still not certain as to what is the purpose for creating a new section to grant rulemaking and what is the scope of the rules. We just did a section that said you can do rulemaking with respect to electronic filing. Is this language that's being discussed now, is it solely intended to give the state engineer rulemaking authority to describe what goes into the application, what the application looks like, and is there, yesterday we hear the deficiency, are you telling me they don't have any other rulemaking, that they don't have a generic rulemaking to address this issue? I am a little concerned that we put a specific rulemaking authority in subsection B, then we drop down to C and say now you have generic rulemaking for the subsection. It's a little awkward, but first, what are we trying to do? Is it just the content of the application?
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee meetings, and we've talked about this during the interim, is right now most agencies have authority, statutory authority, to do the rulemaking procedures. The state engineer in some parts of their statutes do, in some parts they do not. So there's been a lot of consternation and discussion about rules that they've implemented. In fact, the next amendment talks about rules that have been in place since 1974 that we've been operating under, yet there's no statutory authority for them to grant those rules or make those rules, even though they went through the exact procedure as set up by law in that period of our history and did it the right way, and we've been operating them. Still, there was no statutory authority for those rules. Now, what this amendment does, in this particular section only, 41.4501, it's not all the rest of the statutes that the state engineer operates under, this statute only, it says from this point forward, if in fact law under this statute needs to be changed for some reason, i.e. we change it, or a decision out of the Supreme Court or something like should change it, then we're giving them the rights to do the rulemaking. And just like my colleague from Johnson County talked about, we all understand all the process that goes involved in that. And ultimately, the governor has to sign them as well. So this is saying from this point forward, you clearly have the statutory authority under 41.4501 to do rulemaking.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. And I guess that explanation is what creates my problem. If what you're trying to do is give general rulemaking, and I haven't seen the state engineer's rules recently, But I think they're much broader than what goes into your application. The way I read this section, and if we adopt it, we have a redundancy because you don't need to put a C and what we just did into B, but ignore the redundancy. All I see that this regulation does is give them the power to add things, say that not only do you need to have the application, these items, but it has to be in blue, needs to be double-spaced, triple-spaced, and this is what the application is going to look like. If the state engineer is saying, look, we need general rulemaking authority for other things, I don't read this as to give that. And frankly, I don't know why you need to adopt rules to give them rulemaking to tell them what goes into an application. I think they could do it anyway. But what I'm struggling with is if you were to distribute the rules, I suspect, from what your explanation was, that they have rules that go well beyond what the contents of an application are. And they're looking for ratification or rulemaking authority. That's a generic rule that goes well beyond the issue of application, the contents of it. And are we not simply right now talking about giving them rulemaking for what goes into the application and what it looks like? And if we're talking about something greater than that, first, we should know that. And then, two, I don't think it gets you there.
Turn it clouding the issue. As I understand the history of this is the fact that in their Constitution, the framers of the Constitution, our Constitution, were pretty shrewd people and knew what was going on, and they knew the importance of water. I mean, they really did, so they said, okay, we'll solve some of the problems by saying the water is the property of the state. And then they formed a board of control and a state engineer, and the state engineer then became the president of that board, and it almost gave statutorily quite unlimited power to the state engineer. Now, given the personalities of certain state engineers, some were of such that I am the root law, and some were a little more authority. And then, as we so many times find out that our co-equals in the other branches of government, every once in a while want to run out and make a law, and then they find out how dirty and tough that is, and then they kind of run behind the skirts of the legislature and say, no, you've got to do it. And this happened. I mean, there was a time, I think, that this state engineer had statutory authority on beyond anything else. And then there was some court ruling say, well, we need some legislative language about it. So what's happened is later on, agencies that have been formed by the legislature have almost unlimited rulemaking authority, but we've left out the state engineer because he had such powerful constitutional authorities. What this bill does is a little attempt to say, okay, we're going to have to give some authority for rulemaking. That's it. There could be a time, really, that probably a committee needs to look at going back and maybe cleaning up some of this, because there is a hodgepodge of rules over here, no legislative backing, rules with legislative backing. But I think for today, if we could get this and move into this century and say we're going to electronic filing, that may be as far as we're going to go. But hopefully that's some of the reason and some of the history why we have a different kind of agency here than we do with some of the later ones.
Mr. Chairman, with regard to the question that was raised as to the scope of this new authority, it is quite clearly limited by the language here to this particular section, which is how you make application for a permit. And I can tell you, having had the experience of making application for a permit, there are quite detailed and quite specific rules that you've got to follow. They're more than a little complex. They basically compel you to have a surveyor and get it done professionally. They relate to the state engineer's need to have permanent records of what's being done and some certainty in things so that you don't get into troubles and vagueness as to what you really applied for. They're very important. And apparently there is some question about the state engineer's current legal authority to make such rules. But I can tell you, in the absence of the rules, you would have a mess. And so they're very important that he have that authority. That's what this amendment does. If he has a need for general rulemaking authority that goes beyond this section, remember this section is just how you apply for the permit, that you can see the specific things in the old language of the law. This bill does not reach that question. It came in saying the state engineer may adopt rules and reasonable rules and regulations in accordance with the APA as necessary to implement this section. And the title really I think between the title and the language that we started with, I think you'd have a constitutional question as to whether you could use this bill as a vehicle to give him general rulemaking authority. What I sought to do in the amendment was to stick to the provisions that came in the bill, which was rulemaking for this section, and split them out so this Senate could debate separately the question of, did you need rules just for the electronic filing, and did you need rules for how you applied generally, which is what the whole section is about. And yes, it's a little awkward to have two different rulemaking authorities set forth, but it enables us to decide separately what authority you want to do. If you want to give him general rulemaking authority, that's a separate amendment that's not here, and we would have to answer the constitutional question of, have you changed the bill so much in its passage that it's got two subjects in it and it's not constitutional. So, and I hope the state engineer understands the limits on the authority he's getting here. It is a very important authority because he needs to be able to prescribe how you do it. It is, until you've done it once, you can't understand how complicated it really is. So I would urge the adoption of this section, but recognize the limitations on it. It's not a general rulemaking authority. It just applies to WS 414501.
Further discussion on the division two. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the division two, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Division two is passed. We're on division three. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I voted yes in the committee. Yesterday when I got up, I kind of blindsided some of my committee members, the presenter, my chairman. I didn't mean to do that. Just got a little carried away on some of it, so I do apologize to those members. That should have been privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I threw it in the bill. What we have in this next section is we have a piece of law that's got about 187 words in it. And this is what they want us to ratify. And what we were talking about yesterday is, do we know what we were going to ratify? This covers everything that was talked about. Those 187 words become seven or eight chapters worth of rules that have already been put together that they're operating under right now. So what we have to decide is, do we want to take this stack of rules that go back to, 1974, and some of them even go back later than that, that have been put together as our water law has evolved? And that's the question that's on the third division.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out, in this division, I have made one change from the language that was in the bill as it came to us. In the bill as it came to us, it was rules and regulations to implement this section adopted prior to July 1st, 2009. I moved that back to July 1st, 2008. And the reason I did that is that it is my judgment that the ones that had been adopted prior to 2008, they've been around a while. We've had practical experience with them. If there were major problems in them, I think we'd have heard about it. These things are used regularly. They are important legal documents. If there was a big screw-up in there, I think we'd know all about it. And there hasn't been. After July 1, either you could have a rule. I don't know that there were any. But if they had adopted one after July 1, they might not have been out long enough for people to have found a problem. And I didn't think it was wise to go ahead prospectively and grandfather in something they hadn't done yet. So that's the change that I made. This particular subsection is a matter of judgment. Do you want the state engineer, if we don't pass this subsection, I think that he probably will decide he needs to take all his existing rules on how you apply for a permit and run them through the rulemaking process. That is an operation that consumes significant state resources, time of the state agency involved, state engineer's office, time from the Attorney General's office, publications and hearings, you know, all the protections. And you do have the risk, because I suspect in the interim before he got that done, it takes a while, he'd continue to use his old rules, you'd have the risk that somebody would come in and contest their use in court and you could get a mess. For those reasons, I think it's probably a good idea to adopt this subsection. But if you decide, no, this is water law is real important. We better run those through the process again with all the protections that are there, then you want to vote against this particular division. So that, as I see it, is the issue you have before you.
Senator Nicholas?
And I would concur with respect to the procedural aspect about adopting a rule and regulation. My assumption is the concern is that notwithstanding that the state engineer's office has been operating since 1957 in the 50s on rules and regulations defining what goes into an application, what it should look like, how to comply with the requirements, different ones for surface grounds, different ones for dikes, things like that, he's concerned that somebody will challenge him that he didn't have the rulemaking authority, and so that when those rules were adopted at that time, they were adopted without legislative authority. When you go through the rulemaking process, the process leads to a rule that has the full force and effect of law, so you can't challenge the procedural aspect of addressing the rule. However, 10 years, 20 years later, you can always go back and challenge the substantive provisions as though they went outside the agency's rulemaking authority. So even if you go through the rulemaking process, you generate a rule, and then 5 years later, you cannot challenge whether the rule was properly adopted, the procedural aspect. But substantively, you could always go back and challenge whether or not in the first instance, he had the rule, or suppose there's a rule that says nobody in Albany County can have any water rights. You can go back and say, well, that was, even though you went through the proper rulemaking process, that is outside your jurisdiction. That is a legislative function and not. My concern with the language here went the word ratification, is that we're going well beyond the notion that what we're looking at is whether or not procedurally the rules were adopted. you're now going into what our colleague from Casper is concerned about, and that is we're ratifying the language that's in those rules and regulations substantively as the substantive law of Wyoming as of this date until the rules and regs are changed. I think I could accept a proposition that if we put into regulation the effect to say that we are going to recognize or we're going to ratify, if you will, his rulemaking authority as of the time that he made it. But that's different than going and essentially adopting the entire language and ratifying it as the substantive law so that if, in fact, there is a provision that says if you're in Albany County, you cannot apply for water rights, which we know that's not there, but if it was, then the argument is doesn't make any difference. The legislature ratified that as the law, so the rules are going to be the law. And frankly, if that's what you want to do, then put the rules into statute, and we'll examine the statute to see if we all agree. But it's not appropriate to adopt a rule or to refer to the rule and say that is now the statutory law, and we're not going to review it. If it is, then let's get them out and let's put them in the statute. If all you're doing is saying procedurally we do not want to impose the requirements to go back into the rule-making process and that procedurally we're going to adopt that, that's a different process, I submit, than what's happening here.
Quite frankly, none of this came up in our discussion as to the word ratified and the meaning of it. It's never been the intent of the Agriculture Committee to go out there and say that we're ratifying rules as they were law. The whole purpose of this is just to say that the rulemaking authority and what they did and what we've been operating in was done properly. If there's something in these rules that violate the law or the Constitution, we're not saying we're ratifying it, therefore it's okay. Now, if there's some different language that my colleague from Albany County would like to bring, I'm certainly open to it. I haven't talked to my chairman. But that was never the intent, is to say that this thick stack of rules that started in 1957 and 74 are, in fact, the law the way we interpret them today. That was not the intent.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate it, and I assume that that's the case. So what, in essence, you're doing is you're saying that what we're saying here is that we're going to recognize the state engineer's rulemaking authority as of the time that he engaged and adopted those rules. And so we recognize it now, and it's not to be challenged. I think maybe we can do that. My colleague from Goshen County pulls out the ex post facto law. If someone did not have the authority at the time, whether the legislature can come in and said, notwithstanding that, we're going to deem it as though you had the authority, I don't know. But regardless of where we are, I'd urge you to reject this amendment. Let's come back and do it right, but at least try to do what we're focused on, and that is procedurally. We're going to recognize the authority and recognize those as duly adopted rules and regulations. Substantively, they have to stand like any other regulation that exists and that's adopted.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very interesting debate on this. These rules have been in effect since 1974, and I've got a copy of the front page, Rules and Regulations, State Engineer's Office, State of Wyoming. The state engineer at the time was Floyd Bishop, and he signed it. Then it was approved as to authority and substance, Office of the Attorney General, Clarence Brimmer. And then it was attested to by Thyra Thompson as the Secretary of State. So at the time in 1974, our Attorney General, Clarence Brimmer, proved as to authority. So I think that it's been around 35 years. It's had all the chance in the world for case law. It's working. Doesn't need fixing right now. It's not broken. So let's please do this so that it continues.
Further discussion on Division 3? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Division 3, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
Division 3 has failed. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Division 3 is passed. We're now on Committee of the Whole, number 2. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Please.
Can I ask him to do that, Mike? That's what I'm supposed to do, you know. Okay.
Now, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to Senate File 9 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, this just takes it back to the year 2000 rather than 2008. I'm not sure if there's been any rules that are implemented since 74 and 75. The testimony's been that we're really looking at the ones that happened in 74 and 75. I just want to make sure that there hasn't been anything done recently that would affect my county as it relates to the what we basically call the triangle over there in Goshen County with all the wells that we've had, because the state engineer first wanted rulemaking authority during that time period. But actually, when we look at the restriction of this, and it's only for the permitting process, I'm not sure whether it makes a lot of sense to get too excited about this one way or the other, because I think that the rules making authority is fairly well restricted, and I think we'll probably look at a different amendment on this subject that people will be more comfortable with tomorrow. So vote it up, vote it down. It looks like after the discussion we've had that this is a fairly limited rulemaking authority anyway.
Senator Schiffer.
Chairman. I urge you to resist this amendment. Mr. Chairman, we'll recall that in the time period where we're opening this up again was the Platte River Compact. And that was a long process. Whether it works or not, I don't know. But the state agreed to it. And the time frame under discussion is the Platte River Compact. There are lots of reasons not to go there again. One, we can't create any more water for right now. Two, it was incredibly expensive. And three, we took a severe beating about the head and shoulders on that Hummer. And it wasn't a lot of fun. And let's not do it again. The first time, you know, and I like to say I'm a slow learner, you know, but you know I'm not. I'll go back a second time. But boy, that one was painful to the tune of about $13 million. I urge you to resist this till we make absolutely sure we know what we're doing.
Further discussion on Amendment 2. Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
Amendment number 2 has failed.
The biggest red herring speech I've ever heard.
We are now on the bill.
goes up on the
only this long.
Is there any discussion on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 9, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay.
No.
Senate File 9 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for consideration is Senate File 46. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 46, sponsored by the School Facilities Commission, School District's Facility Lease Fees Limitation, and Act Relating to School Buildings. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Coe, DiCaria, Jennings, Massey, Von Flatern, Senator Co-Chairman.
Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the do pass recommendation on Senate File 46 and defer to Senator Massey for an explanation of the Senate file.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a simple cleanup bill that's coming from one of the interim committees. Section 15 of Article 21, it outlines that school buildings that have surplus space can allow local early childhood organizations and BOCES to go ahead and use that space. And then there's another subsection after that that indicates that those facilities have, or those entities have to be state licensed. In replicating that part of the statutes over into Section 3, Title 21, it was in subsection A was inadvertently left out. And all this bill does is just simply do a cleanup and brings over both subsection A and subsection B over into that title.
Further discussion? Hearing the question being called, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 46, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Senate File 46 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for consideration is Senate File 59. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File Number 59, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, Road Closure, an Act Relating to Highways. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landers, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask them to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 59, Road Closure. And to explain this bill, you have me, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Road Closure, this is the sequel. I think you're all quite familiar with, most that were here last year are quite familiar with this particular bill. And it has to do with people running barriers on a closed road, particularly barriers closed for winter traffic, blizzards. It also has to do with hazardous spills. And I can tell you we just had one in Campbell County that closed 25 miles of Highway 50, where a crude oil hauler had left his valve open, or somehow his valve had become open, and he sprayed the road with crude oil. And at about 15 below zero in the middle of December, the sand couldn't take the crude oil up. It just sat on top of it. They couldn't get it cleaned up. We had a one-lane road for about 7 days. So barriers are up. They were doing limited traffic. Should it have been both lanes and there had been no way of getting through there, the barriers would have been up. And if you had people running these barriers for the original, per the original statute, which was $100, people would have done it. And more so would they have done it versus what this bill does, which raises it to $750. So the language on page 2 is really the essence of the bill, and it is all new language. What we are really doing is allowing, putting in statute what they are presently doing in some cases, where with a phone call or discussing it with the highway patrol at the barrier, you can obtain permission to get around the barrier and get to your destination. What we are doing is we are raising on line 2, page 2, raising it from $100 to $750 fine. If you remember the stories last year, a group of, I believe they were skiers or possibly snowmobilers, were headed out from the Midwest, hit the barriers on I-90 by Gillette, looked at the $100 fine, said, there's four or five of us, split the difference, let's go around the barrier, we're on vacation. And on they went. I had pictures last year. I didn't think most of you needed to see the same pictures again of the mess that's created by those running barriers, getting caught in the middle of the interstate. Somebody causes the first wreck, or the drifts get big enough to pile the cars up, and traffic ceases at that point. We spend thousands of dollars cleaning that mess up once the weather clears, and then you have your snowplow drivers out there, and they are also running into people that shouldn't be there. They're running on the assumption that the road is closed. They do their best, but in the dark, in the blizzard, they're still going to probably hit a car before they see it, or the car itself is going to hit the plow, one or the other. So what this does is on line 6, it says that the Department of State Highway Patrol may allow a person to proceed. Once again, they want to be able to control it from a central point. That is why it says the Department or State Highway Patrol. They do not want individual sheriffs or city policemen giving permission for those to go by. In most cases, they wouldn't know the whole story about why the road was closed or at what distance it would be closed. Section little I under B, the person requesting permission to travel upon a closed road is seeking to travel to a destination beyond the closure point, but in an area unaffected by the conditions warranting the closure. Once again, the oil spill in Gillette, it was approximately from town about 15 miles down. There's a couple little subdivisions in between. They had no problem. They had permission. Under double I, the Department of Highway Patrol makes a determination that they have, through their central dispatch and the local highway patrolmen on the ground, have determined that getting past that barrier to the point that is requested would not be, there is no danger or hazardous conditions that would reasonably preclude the ability of that person to travel that closed portion of the highway, and that the person making the request shall agree to any conditions or requirements of traveling the road, as in only to a certain point, keep your speed down, or other conditions that may be asked of them. And then on C, on page 3, any permission granted under subsection B of this section to travel upon a closed road shall be granted by the Department of the Highway Patrol on a case-by-case basis. Unless otherwise determined by the Department of the Highway Patrol. Once again, they want to centralize who's giving it so they know who's out there, what's out there, and what kind of operations the Highway Department is doing on that road, if they're plowing, they're cleaning up, whatever the hazard may be. And that it is, they will know who's there because it'll be done out of central dispatch. It will be a phone call, and the fine will rise from $100 to $750 to deter those that just figure they can pay the money and they'll be good to go. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on the liability portion. Is the state assuming any at liability we do not have now by saying it's okay to go and then there's some kind of an accident or something happens? Or is there any, I mean, this is a little different now if a person goes around it, as I understand it. They made the decision. They're doing it. But if you put this language in, you get the state involved. Does that affect the liability at all?
Senator Von Flattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that question came up in committee. And the only answer we could have, not having an actual trial based on this to go by, was to believe that the barrier would have said that the road is unsafe to begin with. Does the state take some liability when they allow somebody to go past it? I would have to assume the better lawyer may win. But in reality, they are cutting them down to a shorter distance or giving them some parameters as to travel. I would say only a court of law in a trial would probably prove the point or not.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on that point, I would think that the state's sovereign immunity would kick in that particular circumstance. Now, maybe some of the attorneys will argue about that. I don't know. Mr. Chairman, this has been an issue in the Senate for a number of years. I've been involved in the debate. The previous senator, late senator from Senate District 1, been involved in it because some of his constituents had problems. And the problem had been that the bureaucracy at the Highway Patrol and the Highway Department had been totally insensitive to the problems of those of us who live in rural areas, who live on these roads that get closed by conditions that occur beyond where we live, and we can't get home. It happened in my area. They would close Highway 487 that I live on, which is the one that runs from a junction with Highway 220 down to Medicine Bow. They would close it, and they would rightly close it, because Shirley Basin, when the snow and wind, you don't want to be anywhere near that place. It is dangerous. You shouldn't be out in that road. But those of us who lived in the Bates Hole area before you reached Shirley Basin, our roads weren't affected by those kind of conditions at all. But the barrier was up at the junction. And these circumstances occurred in quite a number of places around the state. And frankly, in most of the rural areas, most of the time, a rule of common sense applied, and there wasn't any trouble when the local residents went around the barrier. But if you happen to get a highway patrolman, shall I say, with more zeal than common sense, you could get fined, and it cost you $100. And that was a risk people were willing to run and had been running. When you raise the fine to $750, that changes the dynamics quite a bit in that kind of risk. Frankly, in our area, they've gotten sensible, and what they've done is put at the 220 junction a warning that the road is closed so many miles ahead so that people will know, the through traffic will know it cannot get through to Medicine Bow. But the local traffic that is perfectly safe can continue. And that's worked pretty well in our area. I don't know whether they've done that around the rest of the state where there's been the problem or not. This does give a procedure for dealing with that circumstance. The problems that you get into where people run the barrier and get into the part of the road where the trouble really is are horrendous. The chairman of the committee has described them well. I think maybe we've got the problem resolved and we ought to pass this bill, but if we continue to have problems in some of the rural areas, we'll be back and talk to you about we need to do something further, because there can be some very real problems when they close roads that don't need to be.
Senator Vasey.
Sponsor, I certainly applaud the committee for taking into the consideration that those people that truly do need to get past these barriers. Just a couple things. How does that information get to the public, because I would imagine it pertains more to the local people than it does through traffic, and I forgot the other one.
Senator Von Flattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will say that there will be a sign on the barriers with phone numbers. And should the barrier be manned, then you're talking right to a highway patrolman, and he will call in himself. But other than that, it'll still take a phone call from a local sheriff's deputy or city policeman.
Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Von Flattern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 59, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Senate File 59 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 22. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 22, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, Wyoming Economic Development Act, an act relating to the Wyoming Economic Development Act. It was assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, referred back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move for the reading of the bill be dispensed with, and further that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, that it do so with a due pass motion on Senate File 22. And Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and I ask that be read at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 22, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 5, line 18.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that amendment, and before we get into the bill, this is strictly a LSO cleanup conforming amendment, changes one word, revolving presently is to correct it so it's with existing statutes, and I would ask that you vote and approve the amendment at this time.
Discussion on the amendment? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We're on the
Thank
bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like everybody to note that this is a historic time in the Senate because to explain this good piece of legislation for his very first time, I would like to call on Senator Honeycutt.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Honeycutt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you have before you is Senate File Number 22, and there are amendments to the Wyoming Economic Development Act, in particular the Challenge Loan Program. Primarily, they are looking for increase in their lending limits. On page 2, you will see that in the bridge loan section that they want to raise the limits to $500,000. In line 16, they are making a small change from bank to lender. Line 19, which is the guaranteed loan participation, they want to raise it from $500,000 to $1 million. And I think it's all based on what Bob Jensen and his department were saying, is that the costs of everything have gone up to the point where a loan under $500,000 is sometimes not practical. They want to get up to about $1 million so that they are competitive and can work with larger companies. Another portion, and Senator Cooper had asked me about this. They are bringing the Main Street program, loan participation program, into this program. Back in 2004, the Senate did pass a Main Street revolving loan program where they gave them $300,000. They got the rules out in 2006. They have committed over $210,000 of this money. When I was told that if this is acceptable to this body and is passed as law, that the Main Street program, $300,000 will, as the companies pay them back, the monies will go back into the general fund through their agency. The Main Street program is a little different than the Challenge Loan program. They have a limit of $100,000 per person or per business, and the matching participation of the loan of the Main Street port is 75% versus 50% in the challenge loan. A lot of that is due to banks are a little more reluctant to loan to retailers and people in the downtown areas who want to just refurbish the fronts of their building and the structure of the building rather than buying equipment and building all new buildings. Let's see, there's no real fiscal impact. Let's see, I did discuss that. The Main Street portion is from lines, primarily line on page 5, line 8 through 19. And before I pass the small amendments, is there any discussion, I would say?
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that everybody understands where we are, this doesn't contain any appropriations money. That will be up next. It only changes their operating rules and their thresholds and then combines the Main Street program in with this program, which they wanted to do because both are working pretty well. The question of the dollars is going to come up here right away, but it is not a part of this bill. It just allows them to participate and make, as was in, as was pointed out by the good senator from Laramie County, that makes the rules and operating and the loans to be of more significance and more value. Whether or not there's going to be enough money to do that with our budget at this point, we will be deciding in the next bill. So this is operational procedures, the amount of money that's there, and so there really isn't anything in here yet to have heartburn about, we don't feel, because it is just allowing them to keep up with inflation. Projects are bigger. Everything is there. It's been pretty successful, but we'll see how much money we got to put into it a little bit later.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask one of the proponents of the bill to give us a very brief explanation of the underlying program. Frankly, those of us who don't particularly work in this area lose track of the intricacies of what we've done and what we haven't and what's still going on over the years. So just a very brief explanation of what the program is would be very useful.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. And if, when we receive that explanation, if you could talk about what funds are being loaned out of revolving accounts versus what are direct appropriations that are being loaned out, give us an idea of what the expectation is. And then maybe over the course of the next day or next week, if we could receive a status report of all the revolving accounts, what their balances are, and maybe a picture of what the loans that were approved over the course of the last year or two. Because part of what happens is you increase these limits, you're going to get fewer loans with the monies you have, which means there's less to go around. And my perception is that oftentimes some of the larger communities get there to the trough first, and you give them more money to get. By the time your little communities get there, the trough's gone. But I too forget whether these are revolving loans, that there's a fund, whether they're direct appropriations.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Chairman. The Challenge Loan Program has been around for at least 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and it's a vehicle set up that's administered by the Wyoming Business Council to have participation. You know, we've had some economic development programs that the legislature has authorized years ago that were pretty much a disaster. Amendment 4 is what comes to my mind. But we still felt like there was a necessity to try to help in the economic development area. And we came up with this challenge loan program where we deal with banks and then there's some cross collateral. And it's a lot better program. And of course, it requires 2/3 vote by the legislature to authorize any money. The money goes into the program as a one-time appropriation and then that is used and it feeds on itself. And every year when we come back, and I think this body chose to put $1 million extra dollars into the program last year, that money stays in the program. The loans are made, they're serviced, and you'll see we have a list we'll be glad to furnish you that shows all the people that have borrowed the money and the payment status. And there have been a couple of instances where we do have some bad loans, but if you look at the ratio of that versus those that are performing, it's much better than anything I've seen where government's been involved. And the key, of course, is because the cross collateralization with the banks and the banks being involved in the issue. I don't know the exact amount, but it seems to me that there's about $20 million in this program that's revolving, continues to revolve. The bill that the chairman talked about is, to add more money to that, and the reason being, and we'll get into that a little bit later, about the program is working, and maybe it's time to try to help a little bit more.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have all the information as requested by the good senator from Laramie. It was provided to the committee. We have it. We'll be happy to get it out on the floor. We were kind of saving that as we get into the request for appropriations. It has all the history and who has received the loans, who's paid off, who hasn't. What it is, the perception which you indicated that I was a little bit worried about, that all the big communities are get it, really isn't so because of the revolving nature of it and the limitations that are in this bill and will continue to be. This loosens it up some, but you have to have enough to do meaningful projects. The one of the main purposes of this bill, of course, is providing the Main Street program, which is in there to be able to expand, do a little bit more, and work under the same management as this particular program. But all the information you requested will be provided to the floor as you wish, and that will come either on second reading, which now you request it probably will, but we have been holding that because of there isn't a whole lot of money left that isn't loaned out, and that's one of the things we have to talk about as we move forward in deciding whether to fund it. But I will see that you get all that information.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the question I have is with the Main Street program. And it goes to Section 2 of the bill on page 5, which repeals an important provision of the Main Street program. The Main Street program, as described and laid out in 9211104, is to implement the criteria of the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And the purpose of that is to look at historic buildings in downtown areas of Wyoming and to provide technical assistance and training just generally information to towns to preserve those historic parts of our downtown. And then the payoff, of course, is a revolving loan program in order to preserve the exterior parts of those historic buildings that the National the Main Street program has been assisting them with. Now, all that is still in place, but with this repealer, it takes out those loans, and it just leaves the Main Street program with the training and the technical assistance. Instead, it redefines the loans in this bill, I think, and this is really what I need assistance with. Over on page 2 and 3, the Wyoming Main Street Loan Participation Program now means loans to any businesses for building improvements, period. It removes it from any kind of criteria with historic buildings and historic preservation, and also eliminates the limitation to just the exterior parts of the building. And now essentially it says any building that's in a Main Street in Wyoming can now apply for these loans rather than focusing it on historic buildings. And there is a difference between old buildings and historic buildings and the exterior upkeep of those buildings. So if I'm reading this right, it seems like quite a bit of a change by repealing that. And I'm wondering, why repeal it? Why not just simply go into the existing statute and provide the enhancements that are elsewhere in the bill?
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for turning my mic on. That's always good.
It didn't want to work.
I don't want to work either, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the hard work that's gone into this bill, and I think this program is actually it has specific authorization within our Wyoming Constitution as a direct result of the old, it was mentioned previously, Amendment 4, and as a consequence, when we add money, as I understand it, to this program, it will be required to have a two-thirds vote to approve additional funds to go into the program. It's an interesting exception in our Constitution. It has kind of a tortured history. And other places in our Constitution, specifically, of course, Article 3, Section 6, and Article 3, Section 36, and Article 16, Sections 1 and 2 and 6 do prohibit the use of public funds in this manner. So, I think we have to think about how we move forward in Wyoming and how Amendment 4, by all accounts, the program, it was a terrible failure. This program has been fairly well administered. I think it's been a success. But I suspect when you look at the, it's one specific program authorized in our Constitution. It's fairly unusual, and I would suggest to you that maybe it's not a proper function of government and not a function of a proper function of government that should respect the competitive nature of our world and the fact, when some businesses are able to get government funding for part of their business and others are not, I don't believe that the government should be, and I hope you'll agree with me, really in the business of making loans to private entities. And I do agree that this is specifically authorized in the Constitution. It's perfectly clear. But that authorization relies on a two-thirds vote, and the real issue, I think, will come when we add funds to this program.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me make it perfectly clear that when the funding bill comes up, it does require a two-thirds vote because it is an offshoot of the Amendment 4 program, which I also agree with the senator from Fremont County was a disastrous failure, and have mentioned that within committee. These are basically the thresholds of what they can do. The testimony on combining the Main Street program, and the other one was for more efficient administration. It was my understanding that the same criteria will still be used. We will have to check on that. One of the reasons I wanted to expand that is because right now the Main Street program says only for facades and fronts of buildings. Now, that was found to be extremely impractical because it's very difficult to put up a front in some cases without it being properly anchored and going a little further back and doing some other renovation within some of those particular buildings that you've talked about. And that was one of the reasons that they want to expand that a little to be able to do more than just the front facade. Now, it is our understanding that the same criteria that is in the Main Street program will continue to be in the Main Street program. It will just be operated in conjunction with this particular program. If that is not the case, that was our testimony. If that is not the case, then we need to correct it, but we will go further and look at that. There was a lot of testimony from participants in the Main Street program, all who favor this company. There was no negative testimony whatsoever from anyone involved with the Main Street program. And so I think it's the right way to go. When we get to the funding issue, that's kind of another matter. And it does very clearly require a two-thirds vote, which is, again, another reason for not trying to roll that into one, because this portion, we have been told, does not require the two-thirds. It gives them the authority of how they operate and what participations they can. But if we turn down due to budget restraints or other things, an increase in the funding, there isn't going to be a lot of unloaned money out there right now. So we'll come to that It will be a two-thirds vote, and I think you can make that decision at that time. But I would urge you to approve this. Let us move forward to make it, if it is going to be funded, and go on a more meaningful program.
Further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 22, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Senate File 22 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 57. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 57, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, Rental Vehicles, an act relating to rental vehicle agencies. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman.
Senator Von Fladern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that they do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 57, and I will yield to Senator Escobel to explain this fine little 21-page bill.
Senator Von Fladern, there's a standing committee amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I ask that we read that in at the, after the explanation of the bill.
Okay. Senator Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I ask for this body's patience and understanding and putting up with my presentation limitations and with my lack of eloquence. Having said that, I present to you House
Senator Escobel, could you ask or could you speak into the microphone, please? Or at least raise the microphone.
Having said that, I bring to you Senate File number 57. This piece of legislation has to do with rental vehicles. And on your desk, there should be a handout basically titled 2009 Vehicle Rental Legislation and refers to Senate File 57. This piece of legislation has gone through several groups, and as the handout states, representatives from the Wyoming Department of Transportation, the Wyoming County Treasurers Association, the vehicle rental industry, and a representative from the insurance industry have met and corresponded several times during last year, 2008, to address areas of mutual concern involving the vehicle rental provisions set forth in Title 31. The main areas of concern identified in the current statutes were, number one, rental statutes are scattered throughout Title 31, making it difficult to administer and to follow. Another area of concern, number two, was the general lack of consistency and accountability in the statutes. And number three, lack of penalties and enforcement sufficient to deter noncompliance with licensing requirements and accurate collection and reporting of the 4% surcharge. To address these concerns, the legislative bill was presented to the Joint Transportation, Highways and Military Affairs Interim Committee in August of last year. This created a new chapter within Title 31 that will consolidate rental vehicle statutes into one chapter. It provides consistency and accountability for rental vehicle agencies with regard to licensing and surcharge reporting requirements and it establishes penalties and enforcement measures to address issues of noncompliance. There is minimal new language and some deletions to current statutes in this proposal. However, the proposed changes satisfy the concerns identified by the ad hoc committee and by the joint interim transportation committee. The committee believes these revisions will lead to an increase in consistency, accountability, and compliance, will increase revenue to the state by means of accurate surcharge collection, and will level the playing field for legitimate vehicle rental businesses without causing undue hardships to the consumer. Your handout illustrates some of the individuals and companies that were involved in bringing this piece of proposed legislation to the committee. Starting out, the main change was on page 3, lines 4 to page 3, lines 4 to 24, and page 4, lines 1 and 2. This language changed to require a rental vehicle agency certificate for all types of vehicle rentals, trailers, you drive it, passenger cars, etc. And new language that requires a physical address be included with the application and that the license be displayed within each piece of business, place of business. The new language is consistent with statutory requirements for vehicle dealers, for motor fuel companies, and other commercial businesses regulated by the Wyoming Department of Transportation, and is necessary to locate businesses and determine compliance. So, in my opinion, one of the important parts is important provisions is that there be a physical address be included with the application. Going on page 4, line 4 through page 6, line 8, this is language that requires an established place of business where the public can contact the business and where records are to be kept and made available to determine statutory compliance. This language is consistent with statutory requirements for vehicle dealers, motor fuel companies, and other commercial businesses regulated by the Wyoming Department of Transportation. Going on page 7, line 4 through page 9, line 9, this language addresses the concern of lack of penalties and enforcement in the current statutes. Lack of penalties and enforcement leads to noncompliance and failure to accurately license rental vehicle agencies and collect the 4% surcharge. Language specifies unlawful acts relating to rental vehicle business operations. And during the committee hearing, there was some testimony to the effect that you know, it was pretty difficult to get compliance from some of the rental agencies because they just didn't have the mechanisms to enforce some penalties. Going on page 9, line 11 through page 10, line 24. There again, this language addresses the concern of lack of penalties and enforcement in the current statutes by establishing penalties for rental vehicle agencies that make false statements or submit false reports. The language also designates authority for enforcement of this chapter and allows WIDOT, the Wyoming Department of Transportation, to promulgate rules and regulations. Going on page 11, lines 12 and 13, and lines 17 and 20, this new language is consistent with business practices of renting vehicles by the month and the collection of the 4% surcharge. The existing language defining rental vehicle for the purposes of surcharge collection is 29 days or less. In this provision, it was changed to 31. It also expands the definition of U-drive-it vehicles to include trailers and U-drive-it type trailers in the collection of the surcharge. Page 12, lines 8 through 22, This is new language intended to prevent a person from operating a rental vehicle that is rented and registered out of state and used for gain, profit, or while employed in Wyoming to avoid paying Wyoming registration fees. And there's a note on there that a person may operate a rental vehicle in Wyoming if it is rented in Wyoming and the 4% surcharge has been paid regardless of where it is registered. One of the problems that we've apparently been facing in the state of Wyoming, especially in some of the high industry areas, is apparently some individuals have been renting some automobiles in other states and working in Wyoming, and Wyoming has not had the benefit of receiving some of those rental fees or surcharges. This hopefully would correct that that problem from continuing. On page 15, line 2, and lines 8 through 13, and page 16, lines 5 through 24, and page 17, lines 1 through 4. This new language changes the reporting requirement for the 4% surcharge from annual to semiannual. It specifies reporting and surcharge remittal timelines and requires specific information on rental fleet registration designed to increase accountability. The last area is on page 17. This has to do with a card program. But anyway, page 17, line 17 through page 21, line 10. This new language establishes penalties for failure to report and remit the 4% surcharge. It addresses the concern of lack of accountability and the penalties. The penalties included are consistent with penalties found in Title 39 for delinquent fuel tax reporting, including bonding procedures required for delinquent reporting that are intended to recover any 4% surcharge not remitted. Conditions of the bond are patterned after language found in both fuel tax bond and vehicle dealer bond statutes and are also regulated by the Wyoming Department of Transportation. As stated previously, there were various groups involved in coming up with this proposed piece of legislation, and based on the testimony heard in the committee, the different groups involved were heavily in favor of this particular bill, and there were no voices of opposition. Also, have some have a letter from the U-Haul International on behalf of U-Haul International asking for your favorable consideration of this proposal. To that extent, members of the body, I could hopefully I'll try to answer whatever questions you might have regarding this proposal, and stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Von Flattern.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Standing Committee 1 and have the clerk read it in, please.
Senate File 57, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 18, line 24.
Chairman Von Flattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File 57. And what this does is an error we spotted in the bill in committee, and it's on page 18, line 24. They made two reporting periods during the year and only one remittal of funds during the year. So they had accidentally put in, if you look on line 23 and 24, that if they are delinquent in remitting any surcharge fees for any two times in a 12-month period, well, you only remit fees once in a 12-month period. So that was just a typo. So the amendment, page 18, line 24, you would delete any two. Page 19, line 1, you delete times in a 12-month period. And on page 21, line 1, no, I'm sorry, that would take care of the fact that they have to post a bond if they're delinquent in remitting their surcharge fees. It's as simple as that, not any twice in 12 months or any of that thing. And then page 21, there's another one for penalties and attorney fees. So you go to page 21, line 1, you strike and penalties and insert a comma, penalties and attorney fees. We thought if we had to chase somebody down that they should at least be liable for the attorney fees to do such. And I ask for your favorable vote on the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Von Flattern's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Discussion on the bill. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. I want to be sure I understand this correctly. Under the You Drive It definition, we've added trailers. And there's a lot of rental businesses in Wyoming that will rent trailers only, but they're not like a rental car business. So by expanding that definition, if I go to one of those rental agencies, are they now going to be classified as a rental car agency because of the definitions and have to charge the surcharge and then register themselves? Because those trailers typically would rent for under 31 days. I'm just wondering, are we bringing them in because of the definitional change?
Chairman Von Flattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good Senator Fremont County, I really don't know that. That's a good question that did not come up. We did include trailers, and I think, and I believe since our discussion had to do with some of the national trailer renting companies for moving yourself, that we never actually spoke to the equipment dealers that actually rent trailers on the side. My understanding, we were told there's 93 companies with a rental license in the state. I would have to agree with you that maybe that doesn't cover all the equipment rental companies. So I will get that answer for second reading.
Senator Schiffer.
Sponsors. On page 10, lines 13 and 14, where they're talking about the enforcement officers, and the precise words are, any other enforcement officers designated by the department. Could you enlighten me of who else I've got to look for when I'm going down the highway? Who are these folks that we're going to have enforcement officers?
Chairman Von Flattern.
The good senator from Johnson County, I'm sure that you keep one eye looking all around as you drive, but actually the only one that would fall within that we're aware of, and we had this discussion last 2 years ago, was a port of entry, those that do the inspections there. So I will ask that question, too, to see if it goes any further than them.
President Hines?
Mr. Chairman, one question that I haven't either understood or followed correctly. It seems like when I'm at airports and see rental cars, they all have out-of-state license plate, which I understand is okay if they're registered properly in that state. But my question is to the fees that goes to Wyoming. I understand the surcharge goes to the department, Transportation Department, but I'm asking, is there a charge then that county receives, or do they receive part of the license plate on these rental cars?
Chairman Von Flattern.
If anything they rent has to be licensed, then they need a rental car license from the DOT. So that should answer that. Now, whether they comply or not, you'll have to ask them, and I'm sure you'll get a straight answer. Fellow senator from Campbell County, on the 4% surcharge, that is allowed the company, and one of the companies that was involved in setting these, gathering these rules and regs out of other statutes and then adding the new language, is one of the ones you're speaking of. About every one of their cars is registered in Idaho generally. And I know they run 600 or 700 or 800 of them out of their facility in Jackson, and every one of them during the summer, and every one has Idaho plates on it. That 4% surcharge, if they plated that car in Idaho, they just send a check to YDOT for that 4% they collected off of you, me, the tourist, on the rental of the car. They can take that 4% and buy Wyoming plates and write it against the 4% they collected. So they collect $100 in 4% surcharges and $100 they paid out in buying Wyoming plates, zero remittance to the state of Wyoming. But since they do register them in Idaho, we just get the 4%. And as long as they pay that, they're legal to operate those cars with Idaho plates in the state of Wyoming.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm probably speaking about something now that I'm not sure it is still the case. But in the past, the very cars you mentioned, they had to have a certain percentage of those registered in the state of Wyoming. I think that was by rule of the airport board, which gives them the operating agreement. And they couldn't register all of them in Idaho. We did require that a certain percentage of them have to be registered in Wyoming. The reason for that, for example, in our case in Jackson, is they do hundreds, if not thousands, of cars that they have to rent out. But they are a very seasonal business. And to have all of them sitting there empty when they can transport them among many other states when the season goes up only seemed to make sense, other than to encourage them to just have the cars sitting there, not rented, taking up space on the parking lot. So there are requirements, a certain number of those, and I can't tell you what it is anymore, but a certain number of those must be registered in the state of Wyoming. But this gives them the ability to move the vehicles where there is a demand at a time there is a demand. And that was so the reason for that, to require every one of them to be registered in Wyoming, when in fact there are other states that don't allow that reciprocity unless we do, didn't seem to be very counterproductive. So there should be some requirements. And there are, I believe, at most of the areas where you're around state borders. But the reason for having to give them flexibility is the market comes up as the season goes down, and there's not much demand in the fall and the spring, and there's more demand in the summer than the winter, et cetera. And to have the cars just having to sit there when there is no demand for them didn't seem to make sense.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I do have a couple questions for the sponsors of the bill. When you get to on pages 8 and 9, when you talk about enforcement, if you go to line 13 on page 9 where we talk about enforcement, you have language that's identical to the language on page 8, 18 through 21, and ultimately when you get into the enforcement section, it's kind of what you're going to do if they do some of those other things, and I'm wondering if that's over-limiting, particularly in light of Section B. To me, the organization seemed duplicative and confusing in some of that. That maybe you can help me straighten that out. In addition, on page 10, at the end of lines 9 through 11, you've provided an opportunity for the department to revoke a rental agency's certificate for violation of this chapter. Other places, you've indicated how long that would be, and here it seems to be open-ended. I don't know if that's intentional, or if that we'll leave that for the discretion, or if that's something we'd want to address a little bit deeper. With respect to following up on the good senator from Campbell County's question, with respect to any opportunity for any of the recovery to go to local law enforcement or counties, I would note that on page 10 in subsection C, lines 13 through 19, that not only will the Highway Patrol and other law enforcement agencies, which we now know where you have to watch out for those port of entry people, they may be sneaking up on you, to the good senator from Sheridan and KC. But ultimately, there's some recovery that it will help offset enforcement with the Department of Transportation. But in C, we've also provided or put that duty upon local law enforcement, both sheriff's offices and police departments, that will be apparently no real offset available to them. As I've understood our discussion today, then when you get back to page 17, there was a couple things that some questions that hopefully you might be able to clarify for me in understanding the bill. Lines 6 and 7 on page 17, you're requiring the rental agency to retain copies of all rental contracts, but we don't have any indication for how long that would be. Dropping down a few lines, line 13 through 14, you're telling them that they'll have to provide other information. And that seemed awfully vague. I don't know if we don't have some kind of records retention, how other information or what other information might they be able to, what might we be able requiring them to provide to us at a later date. Then also I would note that when you got right to the bottom of page 17 in subsection F, you start to hammering them. If they don't pay their 4% surcharge, you have a penalty of 10% of the surcharge or fees due or $10 per month that they're delinquent, whichever is graded, is added to the amount. As I read that, if they're late 1 month, that would be 10%. If they're late 2 months, that would be 20%. If they're late 3 months, that would be 30%, and so on. Ultimately, that anyway, I think that there's an issue there with ultimately maybe no upper limit. Although later in the bill, you limit that to you have a 100% penalty that you impose later in the bill. Some of those seem to be a little inconsistent. You've given authority on page 18. You've given authority for the department to waive the penalty, which seems appropriate. I just want to make sure that the department, if that's a binary, whether that should be in a binary or not, whether they waive the entire penalty, if they have the authority to waive only part of the penalty. The last couple of questions I have are on page 20. With respect to you have there in lines 4 in subparagraph D, you've got you're conditioning issuance of a rental vehicle agency certificate that the agency is not practicing fraud or making any fraudulent representations or violating any law relating to the business. I'm assuming that the department will make that determination, but somebody will have to make that determination. And I guess ultimately when you look at that subparagraph D and then look at the right below that, lines 32, we start the enforcement, and ultimately what we have is a condition that potentially results in forfeiture of automobiles or assets of the rental agency. And when we do that, I'm just wondering if we ultimately end up with a situation when you get to page 21 where you're impounding those vehicles as security for all amounts due, and ultimately this seems to be kind of like a nuclear option, but I guess my concern is, or my question to you would be, if you're impounding for security for payments, are we going to be interfering, or is it your intent to interfere or change the priority of other security interests, mechanic lanes, storage lanes, those types of things, if you're starting to impound those cars? There's lots of other people who may have some types of security interests or collateral interests in those cars. So I know that's a long laundry list of questions, but those were some concerns I had about the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Bumflatter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there's no way that I could keep up with the writing of all the comments by the good senator from Casper. So I will address the final ones for sure and work on the others with you, I hope, if you'll be so kind to do that with me. But I will say that on the bonding issue, the penalty issues are all, as you see in the handout, the last bullet point on that are penalties, including, are consistent with penalties found in Title 39 for delinquent fuel tax reporting, including bonding procedures required for delinquent reporting that are intended to recover. Conditions of the bond are patterned after language found in both fuel tax bonds and vehicle dealer bond. So I think a lot of your questions probably, if they do affect or are not written correctly, probably we need to deal with those other statutes to make sure they are consistent and done correctly by the department. The other parts of your questions, how long to hold contracts, I'm sure we can work on something if that needs to be defined by the dealers. And I really couldn't keep up with much more, but if you'll allow me to work with you in between on second reading, I'm sure I'll have all your answers.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, once again, I'll not get into specifics, but you have to understand that the regulation of the car rental agencies is not just the state of Wyoming, as I mentioned earlier. It is under contract, particularly at the larger airports. It is under contract with their rules, their regulations, what they have to do, the percentage of automobiles, what they can rent, what they can do. But the car rental business is generally now at most of the airports, not run by just an outfit. They're renting cars at your airports. They're multi-state. As I mentioned earlier, an awful lot of the cars in Jackson in off-season wind up in Las Vegas. The company has stops in Cody, in Jackson, Idaho Falls, Ogden, Billings, the Salt Lake. That's so that they can effectively take advantage of the use of the automobiles. And they are multi-state companies, if not national. And so this is not the only regulation. But consider this as we do that. In most of the air carrier service airports, revenue that they pay back to the airport boards are the number one source of income for all of these airports. And they do run your airports. That money does go back, as a rule, to run your airports. And so there may be some fees they're not collecting here or there, but it's a big, big business, folks. And those monies go back into the operation of your airport. Our airport, and I think Casper and some of the others have not taken any public money for years. It all comes from these other sources of income. So we got to be careful that we don't, if you would kill the goose trying to get a few fees that are, and I don't have a problem with the bill, but trying to over-regulate them to the fact that they can't profitably operate within, because it's big dollars. It does go into airports, airport improvements, plowing, everything to do with airport security now. And that's where the preponderance of the money comes from to run your biggest air carrier service airports in the state. So we got to be very careful we don't over-regulate, trying to get a few fees here and there when it is the golden goose as far as airport operations go for most airports.
Further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Von Flanern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 57, please say aye. Those opposed say no. Senate File 57 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carried.
The reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave for report as follows. Senate File 9, do pass amended. Senate File 46, do pass. Senate File 59, do pass. Senate File 22, do pass amended. Senate File 57, do pass amended. Senator Martin, Chairman.
Senator Martin.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried, and the report has been adopted. Reports from standing committees.
January the 16th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 35, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Cole, DeCarrier, Jennings, Massey, Von Fladern, Senator Cole, Chairman. January the 16th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 76, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Cole, DeCarrier, Jennings, Von Fladern, excuse, Senator Massey, Senator Co-Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. And before I make the motion to adjourn, I'd like to say to the body, I think we're off to a good start. We're starting to get the pipeline flowing, and as you see the bills that are remaining on the board, of course, those have been read in, and we'll deal with those, and then the ones that were just read in. So we'll have a number of bills to deal with come Monday. As things get to moving more and more, you can expect it to probably spend more time in Committee of the Whole in order to get the necessary work done. But I do compliment you. I do thank you for all the cooperation, and I think that we're going to do quite well this session if things continue to operate as they have. So, Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 o'clock Monday morning.
Announcements. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet at 8 o'clock Monday morning in the normal committee room. Senate File 54, Physical Therapy Licensure. Second bill, Senate File 40, Court-Ordered Placements, BOCES. And third bill will be Senate File 106, Medication Disposal Program, if time permits. And I think it probably will. And then, by word of advance notice, on Wednesday, we'll go back to Senate File 24, Healthcare Reform Demonstration Project, present the bill, hear public testimony, and possibly start working that bill, and it's a companion bill, the study bill there.
Senator Gase.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, have two meetings coming up. The first one will be Monday afternoon upon adjournment, and it'll be in S-19, and this will be a educational kind of a primer session on Senate File 72, which is the new Corporations Act amendment. So I'd encourage all the members and anybody that's interested to come. There will be no votes taken at that meeting. It's just an educational session on that very large bill that we'll be working on, the Corporations Act. Then Tuesday morning, we'll start at 8 o'clock in the same room. We're going to take care of Senate File 30, bar and grill liquor licenses first, and then we'll move back into the Corporations Act. You know, you got to do first things first. Senate File 72, Corporations Act amendments on Tuesday morning. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet after adjournment here. Give ourselves a little bit of time to grab a bite to eat, and then we'll consider the last bill from this morning, which is the state employee compensation. And then at 2 o'clock on Monday, we'll be hearing callbacks for the Department of Health.
Senator Larson. Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 1 o'clock in S18 to consider Senate File 75, Economic Development Account, Senate File 45, Improvement and Service District Directors, and Senate File 85, Cooperative Electric Utilities Rate Regulation. And further, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Monday, again in S18 at noon or 30 minutes after the noon recess, to consider Senate File 88, Required Use of Ignition Interlock Devices, Senate File 90, Unemployment Insurance, Spouse of Deployed Military, and Senate File 92, Long-Term Care Access.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee, number 1, Judiciary, will meet Monday, January 19th at 8 a.m. in the Senate Judiciary Room S1 to take up the bills, Senate File 86, Revised Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, Senate File 70, Loss of Firearms Rights Protections, and Senate File 96, Juvenile Detention Facilities.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting Tuesday at 20 minutes after the lunch break starts, where we will take up or retake up Senate File 15, Cultural Tourism and Heritage Areas, Senate File 13, Shed Antler Collection, Senate File 48, Game and Fish Landowner Coupon Redemption Period, and if time permits, Senate File 20, Works of Art in Public Buildings.
Senator Landon.
Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet Monday upon adjournment in S13 to consider and give proper time to Senate File 74, Youthful Drivers Restricted Licenses, Senate File 38, Real ID Compliance, and Senate File 60, National Guard Youth Challenge Program.
Senator Larson.
Mr. President, could I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, I've carefully looked at our social calendar here, and there appears to be, I understand that there is a meeting or get-together tonight of the Wyoming Press Association. It does not appear on our calendar. And I was wondering if it is a secret meeting or if they're trying to keep it secret.
I choose not to answer. Majority floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, I'd like to remind everyone that the Senate Rules Committee will meet immediately after our adjournment for lunch today. And that will be in the President's office. The other announcement, I don't know if you've had an opportunity to look at the things in your mailbox, but the Management Council has asked that I call your attention to this document called Anti-Discrimination and Sexual Harassment. As these were passed out, there was a checklist made to ensure that each of you had received this. The expectation of you is that you all read this. Now, we don't plan to give a test, or we don't plan to ask you to sign an affidavit, but I would say, upon your honor as a senator, we would expect that this be read. So having said that, I hope that you have a safe and productive weekend. Thank you, Mr. President.
You have heard the motion that the Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday morning. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senate adjourned.